and welcome to Boston Private Perspectives. I'm Shannon Sakosha, Chief Investment Officer at Boston Private, and today I'm hosting our fourth quarter Market and Economic Outlook podcast. I'm thrilled to be joined by my Boston Private colleagues from our investment team, Ryan McQuilkin, Head of Fixed Income, and Nancy Perez, one of our Senior Portfolio Managers. Thank you both for being here. I can't wait to fire off some questions and dig into what you're seeing as Q4 is off to a roaring start.
Thank you for having me, Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon. Good to be here.
Great. Before we get started with the two of you, I'm going to start us off today with a brief economic and market review. So over the course of the month of September, and really back through all of the third quarter, we saw a pickup in volatility in the equity market. So the first half of the year was really driven by the Fed pivot that we saw in December. We had a complete risk-on environment in the first half of the year. And so everything from stocks to high-yield bonds, anything that had some element of risk to it performed well. And during the third quarter, we really saw a shift to a more concerned, perhaps muted expectation for the rest of the year. And that was based on a number of things. Number one, in the equity market, we saw some disappointing IPO activity. We saw the threat of impeachment that is clearly moved, you know, from the back burner well into the front burner. And we continue to see a lack of resolution in the China situation. And so it was not surprising that we saw what are traditionally less risky assets perform a little bit better in the third quarter. So if you think about what that is, domestic large cap stocks outperformed domestic small cap stocks. International and emerging markets underperformed the United States, and areas like REITs, which continue to benefit from lower interest rates, performed better than the broad equity market. The bond market, for its part, because of some of the movement that we've seen around the yield curve and the impact of negative interest rates outside of the United States, had some mixed performance. However, most bond investors still managed to post a positive return in the quarter. From an economic standpoint, if we look at what's happening here in the United States, we have been experiencing a slowdown in the manufacturing sector for much of the year. And that's been pretty much attributed to what's been happening with the trade war in China. More concerning, however, has been some of the data that was recently released that shows that we may actually be experiencing some slowing in the services part of the economy. So you really want to think of that as being the consumer-led part of the U.S. economy, which has really been the foundation of economic growth for the last several years. And so with that services index declining, with wage growth slowing that we saw from the September payroll report, there does exist a little bit more of concern about the potential for the consumer to continue to support the economy through the rest of next year, of this year and into next year. Outside of the United States, we've also continued to see slow growth. Although we did see some modest improvement in Chinese economic data in September, which indicates that perhaps the Chinese economy is a little bit better insulated from the trade war than we previously thought, the European economy remains slow. And so therefore, it wasn't surprising to see the European Central Bank become a bit easier in their policy, restarting their asset purchase program in the bond market, as well as lowering their deposit rates to an even lower negative yield. And so with that as a backdrop, some of the things that we're watching over the course of the next 3 or 4 months are obviously the situation with China. We've got some talks going on right now that, you know, could be critical as far as the outcome over the next couple of months for the equity markets. We're watching the Fed, and we're looking at the potential for, again, the U.S. consumer. Will we spend into the holiday spending season? Will some of the concerns about lower wages and potential for changes in our employment status in next year weigh on what we do? All of these will be important data points that we will have to look at over the course of the next 3 to 4 months. With that as a backdrop, Nancy, I would love to talk to you a little bit about what we expect for the equity markets. So it's no surprise, really, that given our view that volatility is likely to continue, how do you feel about the prospects for the equity market for the remainder of this year?
Well, to the first part of your question, yes, we do think market volatility is likely to continue, with those dramatic sell-offs being likely followed by pretty impressive comebacks. That's been the hallmark of this, you know, historic bull market, its ability to keep coming back time after time. But keep in mind that we are in the latter stages of this bull market, and it's really not the exception, but the rule that markets are going to be more volatile in this later part of the market. So going forward, going back to your second part of the question, as what do we expect for the market going forward? I'll just say we haven't changed our ranges for the year. We started the year with an expectation that the S&P would trade between 2,500 and 3,000 this year. And the market pretty much has done that. The earnings expectations coming in were expected about 165 for this year, 175 for next year. So valuation kind of supports that type of valuation. Earnings estimates haven't really changed much, so we haven't changed our fair value range. And you'll see that the market actually traded within that range. It started the year off and it sold off to about 2444 at the beginning of January. And then it's sort of peaked in July at 28 around there. And now we're sitting sort of at 2920. So we're sitting at the upper end of that range. And we do think that as we go into this fourth quarter, we might see some earnings. We're going to be looking at the earnings to see how they come in. If they disappoint, I suppose the market could start to trade down, maybe down to the 200-day moving average around 2850, and we might settle in there.
Do you think it's more likely that they're are we expecting that they could potentially disappoint, or is this going to be a scenario where we've continued to see expectations be ratcheted down, and so maybe there's a little bit of asymmetric upside that could be existent in our earnings expectations?
I think that's actually very likely. I think when we came into the first quarter, we were expecting earnings to be down. They surprised to the upside. Instead of being down, they were actually flat. Same thing, same scenario occurred in the second quarter. So I do think investors are sort of prepared for a 4% decline in earnings. But I think if they continue to surprise and, again, they're flat, I think that will definitely give the market some support going forward. And particularly, guidance is going to be critical. Going into this fourth quarter, guidance as far as earnings for next year and as far as employment, we've actually started, you mentioned employment starting to soften a little bit. We've started to see some layoffs, which is a little concerning. And we'll be looking to see what companies and corporate CEOs are saying about their outlook for 2020.
And in the piece that you penned for us a few weeks ago, Don't Fight the Fed, one of the things you pointed out was that when we do see that interest rate cut, just, kind of regardless of what's happening in the economy, how does the market usually respond to that?
Yes. And it depends on what the economy does going forward. But on average, the market does tend to be up on average about 16% in the next 12 months. And even if there is a recession coming on, the average return is still about 11%. So in general, the markets tend to initially rise. And then if the recession sort of starts to develop, then you tend to see the sell-off a little bit after that. So particularly with the economic data that we're seeing now, we think that the market can continue to support these levels. Again, most of the appreciation we've gotten this year has all come from multiple expansion. The earnings are basically flat. So if we don't get any earnings reacceleration next year, I don't see the market being able to support higher levels. The most the market probably could expand with interest rates being so low is probably about a 17, 18, maybe a 19 multiple. So we really shouldn't be expecting above average returns in the next year or so.
So that lends itself to another question. With the multiples that we are seeing today and potentially could see come as we move forward over the next 6 to 9 months, I think that we see a relative valuation opportunity, as I mentioned, in international developed and emerging market stocks. Could you kind of describe some scenarios that could potentially allow for some of that outperformance to be realized?
Yes, definitely we are seeing some interesting relative valuation disparities between the U.S. and ex-U.S. As I mentioned earlier, the S&P is at 16 and a half times. When you look at Europe, they're selling at less than 13 times. Emerging markets is selling at less than 12 times. And when you look at earnings growth, we're really looking at the same earnings growth scenario. So there's really no reason why there should be that much disparity. The other thing is that dividend yields and cash flow yields overseas are much more attractive than they are in the U.S. So that should definitely provide some opportunity for reasonable relative returns going forward.
Our team has been more constructive this year and really back through 2018 on large cap stocks over small cap stocks. What are your thoughts on the small cap market? There was actually an article that I read yesterday that stated that they could be poised for outperformance. And, you know, given the economic backdrop that I described, you know, that sort of was surprising to me that that was an argument. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as you know, we do currently have an underweight in small caps. And economic angst is really the main reason. While small caps are up this year, they did lag large caps, as you mentioned earlier. And historically, small cap stocks do underperform late in the cycle. So the only way they could outperform is if we do get that reacceleration in earnings. If we do get a real reacceleration in earnings and economic growth, then small caps could particularly close that valuation gap, and the fear of economic uncertainty subside, then small caps should start to outperform. But the reason small caps underperform is because they tend to be more debt ridden, and as we get longer in this economic cycle, there's some uncertainty as to, you know, how much pressure is on their margins.
Ryan, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you. And picking up on some of what Nancy just mentioned, how have small companies benefited from the move lower that we've seen in yields particularly over the last several months?
Sure. So, smaller companies tend to be high yield companies. They tend to be have a greater proportion of their expenses tied up in interest rate costs. So certainly the decline in interest rates has been a real positive for them. It also, frankly, helps that they've had some pretty full access to the borrowing markets. You might be a small company, you might be a little bit over-levered, maybe you're a little bit light on revenues. You've had access to cheap funding for a long time. I will say that does make us worry a little bit that when the credit cycle turns, that some of these issuers won't be able to quite stand on their own, but you really have to do your homework. We tend to stick to higher quality bonds anyway, Boston Private. But it does really pay to do a full analysis of a balance sheet and the cash flow, et cetera. But you mentioned overall, we're pretty comfortable with the credit market. It's healthy. You can see that it bears out in the September issuance numbers, both in the corporate bond market and the municipal bond market. We set records year to date in terms of issuance levels. When a company comes to market and issues a lot of bonds, they need to be willing buyers of those bonds. And you certainly saw some strong demand for issuers.
And we had seen a bit of a dip in issuance earlier this year when rates were, or actually at the end of last year when rates were predicted to be a bit higher. Is that fair? And we've seen kind of a resurgence in issuance more recently.
That is fair. And it's also depends on volatility as well. So the fourth quarter was a pretty tough time for issuers to fund themselves in the market.
So with that said, doesn't sound like we're overly concerned over the next several months with a bit of credit risk in our corporate bond portfolios. So shifting to the less risky side of many taxable bond portfolios, how about this conundrum that's been created by the negative interest rate environment? And how is that impacting the treasury market?
Sure. So it's certainly an interesting and somewhat uncharted situation. At last count, I think there's over 17 trillion of negative yielding bonds globally. That of course has the effect of making U.S. bonds more attractive. So overall, you've seen some pretty dramatic flows into corporate bonds, treasuries, agencies, and really, into municipal bonds. Where overseas buyers don't get that tax advantage. The net effect is probably artificially suppressing our yields somewhat. And so, we worry about credit risk a little bit. We also worry about taking too much duration risk. If those flows start to reverse, if things look better globally, you could see that money move outward, domestically, and cause rates to rise maybe more than you expected.
One area that you touched on that I do want to go into in some detail as it affects a lot of our clients is, you know, municipal bonds. After the tax cut, there was some speculation that demand for munis might decline, but we really haven't seen that, have we?
Right. You really haven't. There has been, I will say, a small decline in demand from corporate, investors, namely banks. The reduction in the corporate tax rate now does make taxable bonds somewhat more attractive to them than municipal bonds. So banks have been net sellers, but by and large, the muni bond market is still dominated by retail buyers, individual investors, and the demand from them has been pretty exceptional. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 basically had the net effect of limiting the ability of individuals to shield income from taxes, limiting deductions. Especially in high tax states, you've seen that demand from muni bonds increase pretty dramatically. And municipal bonds are pretty much, they've been a haven historically from volatility. So, during these volatile markets, people choose the safety of bonds, especially muni bonds, in their portfolios.
Well, I'd like to thank Nancy and Ryan for joining me. I think this was a great conversation, and I really appreciate your views on the market.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks for having me.
We welcome any questions or thoughts that you may have. You can find me on Twitter at Shannon Sakosha. And if you want to read more of our thoughts, be sure to follow Boston Private on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook, or all three, if you so desire. And be sure to subscribe to the Boston Private Perspectives Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or Spotify, depending on where you prefer to listen. That's it for our fourth quarter outlook. We'll see you in January for a discussion on how the fourth quarter wraps up and what we can expect in 2020.